Do you want to go down to a 40-hour week without losing revenue? If you're ready to let go of all the extra hours, the stress, the overwhelm, and the clients who hijack your time, consider my signature program, Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind. In it, we'll get your accounting practice under control. We'll fix your pricing problems. I'll show you ways to price so you stop giving away the farm so you bring in more revenue for the work you're already doing. I'll help you disengage the clients who are good people, but are holding your business back and slowing you down. I'll help you package up your services and design them so they're easy for your clients to understand and choose from, while helping you simplify and standardize what you sell. And we'll focus on making your messaging more interesting and compelling, so you attract more of the kinds of clients you want to work with and break out of the hodgepodge of referrals trap. We get your prices up. We get your workload down. We standardize, we simplify, we streamline. And we do this at a pace that feels doable, where you feel confident in every choice you make. Prices up, workload down. Registration is open now. We start Tuesday, May 7th. Come with us. Go to GeraldineCarter.com to find out more.
I wasn't working 15 hours a week, and the rush is what broke me. Like, I just remember dragging my kids behind me at 6 a.m. It was like, you wake up at 5:30, you get them out of bed at 6, and everybody needs to get their shoes on because we got to get to daycare by 6:30 because I got to be in my office at 7 because I have a meeting at 7:05 and you guys have to go now. And eventually I hit burnout, right? And I looked like, I don't want my kids to live being dragged behind their mom.
Welcome to the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast, where I help overworked CPAs go down to 40 hours, then down to 25 hours, and in today's case, up to 15 hours, but not a minute more, without giving up revenue. My name is Geraldine Carter, and today I have as my guest, Erica Goody, who has been on a journey to bring her business up to 15 hours with ample take-home pay. And before we dig into the details, I want to set a few foundational pieces and, of course, welcome Erica back to the show. Erica, welcome.
Hey, Geraldine. Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation. This conversation I sort of teed up on LinkedIn last night and got a bunch of questions and comments that we're definitely going to get into. Before we do that, tell listeners who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Yeah, my name's Erica Goody. I'm physically located up in Southeast Idaho, closer to Salt Lake City than Boise. I own a virtual fractional CFO firm that provides fractional CFO services as well as bookkeeping. And I'm pretty much a soloist. And I'm also a mom, wife, all the things that we do all at the same time.
And just to give some backstory, in case listeners haven't heard us have conversations before, you were my client about 3-ish years ago, and now I'm your client. So we happen to know a lot about each other's businesses. We also have conversations. We're also colleagues, friends. And for listeners, there are going to be questions that I already know the answer to, and of course, questions I don't know the answer to. I just want listeners to know that in advance because it might sound weird to ask a question that I should already know the answer to. So let's dig in with some nuts and bolts. A lot of the questions that came in on LinkedIn were around the tactics, the nuts and bolts. I think that's where listeners' minds are right out of the gates. So let's start high level with your business model. What is it that you sell, so to speak? What are your prices? And about how many clients do you have at those prices?
This always feels like it shocks people when I tell them I have 10 clients. And let me back up. I'm not a tax practice. When I say I'm a fractional CFO, that does not include usually preparing the tax return. Bookkeeping does not include doing the tax return. I always say I'm the translator in between the business owner and the tax preparer, which there is a high need for because CPAs can use words that business owners don't know. So when I say I have 10 clients, I literally mean I have 10 clients. There's not like a horde of 1040s hiding somewhere in my business. So I have 10 monthly clients. All of those pay me monthly. I do work for them every single month. My prices at the low end start at about $500 a month, and I call that concierge bookkeeping. And that is concierge at a high level. You have a CPA reviewing it. You have high-end reporting, and that includes unlimited questions that you want to email me anytime. And I think that scares a lot of people because we're like, ah, don't say unlimited. But in practice, I tell clients you will have 50 questions the first month, 5 questions the next month, and maybe one the next year. And that's great. They just love having the option of being able to tee up their CPA, their CFO, bookkeeper anytime and get a solid, quick answer. So that's my low level. Mid-tier is I call mini CFO. That tends to be my niche is consultants and small agencies. And so that tends to be solo consultants, anywhere between $100,000 and maybe $500,000 in their revenue. That is a package of around $1,400 per month that provides them concierge bookkeeping, also forecasting, a monthly meeting. I do tax planning for that, though I don't do taxes. I know taxes. I just choose to use it from a CFO standpoint as opposed to a tax preparation standpoint. So we do talk a lot of taxes, a lot of tax planning, and a lot of retirement planning in that tier. And then the third tier is what I call fractional CFO, what everybody calls fractional CFO. For my ideal client at that tier, they tend to be in the $1 to $5 million agency range, again, service agency, and that's $5,000 a month usually. And that's a little bit of everything that is everything we've talked about, plus whatever else comes up. That's like I'm your girl. What do you need? Geraldine, you have used this term before that I love, looking for tax tigers hiding in the grass. And I love that term. Things that they don't even know to think about, things that they don't see that I see differently because I just have a different perspective where they're like, hey, we're going to, listeners, one of those, hey, we're going to give one of our employees a $500 wedding gift. And I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to have to put that on the W-2. And they're like, huh? And I'm like, yeah, we can't just like hand out cash from the business without like, you know, like you as the business owner can do that. But like, let's talk about how you're going to do that. And so it's those types of things where they say something that they have no idea if there's a tax implication or a reporting implication or something. And I'm like, hold on, let's take care of that. Or fun things like, let's make sure you have your cash reserve invested well and what's the right balance up there. And so we get into a whole lot of places that's hard to define until I get into the business and know what it is they need and how they operate their business. But again, that's a very close relationship where we're meeting every single month and talking more frequently and all that.
Okay, cool. About how many clients do you have in the bookkeeping bronze level, the sort of mini CFO mid-level, and the top tier gold level?
So at the low level, there's 3 in the lower tier, 5 in the middle tier, 2 at the higher tier.
And how does that spread feel to you? Does it feel like the right balance, or are you thinking about trying, like, in terms of your business, do you want to eventually get everybody in a gold tier? Or in terms of your business, would you love to just have everybody in the bronze tier or everybody in the silver tier? Or do you like having the sort of bell curve across the 3 options?
The answer for that right now is where we are is good. But I feel like this year, you're recording this literally in 2024, I'm in a season of I've built something up and I'm actually kind of forcing myself to stop building right now so that I can take a step back and say, look, like, what have I built and what does that look like? And is it right? And so I've really committed to not going beyond 10 clients this year. Almost like I'm not an artist. Accountants are usually not artists. But like stepping back from your painting and staring at it, we've all seen that kind of cartoon of an artist stepping back and just looking at what they've done and what needs to be adjusted and changed. I feel like that is this year for me in this business of I've built something. Let me take a step back and see what needs to be tweaked and adjusted, and then go from there. So right now, I feel like I'm good. I don't know that that's the long-term answer, though. I have very meticulous reporting for myself on revenue per client, profit per client, time spent per client. I can get down to profit per hour per client the way I track things. I know. Yeah, no, this is like, I'm in a season of also my life where I'm like, this is who I am. It's okay. It serves me well. I can accept who I am.
Yeah, totally. And plus it's fun.
Well, it is. And I feel very confident in my decision-making because then I can look at the profit per hour per client at all those different tiers on average. And I can see which tiers make more profit. Mm. And the shocking result is like, there's actually not a huge difference.
Interesting.
On the profit per hour per client at the different tiers.
Really? Tell us more.
You know, those fractional CFO clients is where I spend the bulk of my time on a per client basis.
Wait, fractional CFO, that's the gold or the silver?
The gold.
The highest, the gold.
It's obviously where I spend the most of my time. They have the greatest need. They have the greatest complexities. And they take more time. They also have more revenue. They have more profit. But when I break it down as just a simple calculation of profit divided by the hours I spent on the month for them, I get to, you know, what do I get to? Probably like $800 per hour. And then when I do the same exercise at the mini CFO silver level and at the concierge bookkeeping, they're almost all the same.
So I want to just get a little more specific. Is it like gold are 800 and change, silver are like also 800 and change, or is it like 900 or 1,000 and change, or like how close is almost?
Good question. Within a couple hundred, I would say everybody hovers around $700. Like for an hour I put in, I get back 700 in profit.
Just for people who want specificity and to make sure we understand, it's the range is between 700 and 900 an hour.
Well, probably 6 and 8.
That's so interesting. Why do you think that is?
That the range is so tight?
Yeah, that there's not greater variability. I mean, especially for $500 a month for bookkeeping across the three clients who are in there, I think people might be surprised to hear that the hourly equivalent of that, the effective hourly rate of that is in the 600 to 800 range. They might be like, wait, hold on, stop the bus. What am I doing wrong? Because I'm losing money on bookkeeping, or like my margins are 20% or 40% on bookkeeping.
Right. It doesn't take a math genius to figure out that I spend less than an hour a month on those clients. And that comes down to, right, if I'm charging 500 and I'm making 800 an hour, you have a decimal in there somewhere. Part of that is systems I've built, tech I've built into my tech stack that allows me to not spend time doing work that a tech app can do for me. And I also have a part-time bookkeeper, and she does the weekly on that. She does the work on that, and she spends more than an hour a month on it, obviously. But I'm including her cost in that profit. And so her cost is included in there. And so I think a lot of it comes down to tech stack and the processes I've created around it so that I have very succinct systems so that it takes me an hour to do that, right?
About how long does it take your bookkeeper to do what she needs to do on a weekly cadence?
She is about a 10-hour a week contractor. I don't want her to work more than I do. From a principal standpoint, if I'm working 15 hours, I don't know. It just felt right that she's also a mom. She also has things. She's going to work 10 hours. So that's our agreement. So across all my clients, on average, she's at 10 hours per week.
Did you share with us who's in your concierge bookkeeping? Who's the buyer type for that service?
Yeah, they're usually right around $100,000 of revenue. It's interesting to see who comes in there. Sometimes I've been DIYing my bookkeeping and now I need something. Sometimes I thought when I first started that package, it was going to be more. I thought that's who I was going to get. It's actually that I'm not getting enough from my bookkeeper. I need a better bookkeeper, which I thought was very interesting when I started getting those types of clients filling that bucket of service offering, like people who already had a bookkeeper. And they were like, I feel like I'm not really getting the data I need. And I need a different bookkeeper.
And when they come to you, do they let go of their old bookkeeper, or are they getting what you're doing on top of their existing bookkeeper?
No, we're transitioning from old bookkeeper to me.
Okay, cool. And when they say they're not getting what they need, what are some of the things that you think they're not getting?
I ask them what I think is obvious, and we'll say, well, this is table stakes. There's a lot of people not serving up table stakes, right? And so I'm like, well, show me what kind of reporting your bookkeeper is sending you on a monthly basis so I can tell you how mine is different. And they're like, oh, I'm not getting anything. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's helpful to know. So I thought that was table stakes in bookkeeping. It's not, I guess. And so it's very easy to cause value in that situation because I'm like, here, what I think should already exist, I'm going to do for you. You think it's wonderful because you haven't gotten it yet. Plus, on top of that, I give them a standard chart of accounts specific to consultants. So they see things where they might have come from a bookkeeper who was a generalist and had a construction company and a consultant and a restaurant. That person generally doesn't have a standard chart of accounts for all of their clients. They can't in that situation. And so I come in and I say, I'm going to set up your books how a consultant agency or how a consultant is going to want to see them, because I know how to do that, because that's all my clients do that. And I've had years of clients being like, can you show it this way? Or can we break it out this way? And so I know before they even get there what they're likely going to want to see. And so coming in and saying, I'm going to break out your reporting like this, and then I'm going to give you a report showing what money you made or didn't make, where your cash flow has been, what direction it's trending. And even just that, and that I would think for listeners feels very basic and very easy. It is, and the clients love it and they're so grateful.
Yeah, don't look past the obvious stuff or assume that the easy stuff is being met, because it might not be.
And I also hear those clients say that they don't know what, but they think their bookkeeper's missing something. Like they don't even know, and I don't know how that feels. I'm not sure what they're seeing or not seeing, but they're like, I'm not sure. There's some confusion. I'm not sure, unease. My bookkeeper's doing something. Not shady. There's not illegal. It's just, I'm not sure that they're 100% accurate. And I'm like, cool. And just having somebody with a CPA at the end of their name to say, I'm going to review it and make sure it's accurate. All of a sudden they're like, oh, I'm so glad you're looking at it. Good. Just a review of it. As CPAs, things jump out at us really easy, and I can figure that out very quickly. And it just gives so much comfort to that client.
Up until recently, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but up until somewhat recently, your website was more coaches and consultants. And then I think I might have seen, tell me if I'm wrong, something like therapists. And now I see agencies. Talk to me about how your niche has sort of morphed over time.
Yeah, it's niching is always a journey. And I think when we start doing it, we think it's a destination, and there's just lots of pivot points along the way. It started as coaches and consultants. And I'll speak to the therapist really quick. Sometimes therapists just find me. They just hear it through the network. I actually don't have any therapist clients right now. Their revenue margin and needs just tend to be not able to pay what I'm charging. And so, but for the kind of to small agency transition, what I found was when I can help a consultant at $500,000 of revenue, that person's either making a decision point. Either they're going to stay solo and build a business model around them being a solo consultant, or they're going to build an agency. And it's that pivot point that makes different financial strategies, right? And so I tend to find both of those people. From a marketing perspective, I would honestly say that that's two different niche markets, and I'm serving two different niche markets when I look at solo consultants and small agencies at $2 million per se. Those are really different people, and you have to talk to them different ways. And that is not something I've addressed in my marketing yet, more so because I'm at this season where I'm just assessing. But that's an observation that I would completely agree with if somebody saw that externally.
Yeah. Okay. And it doesn't sound like it's necessarily a problem.
No, I think in the same way I just talked about my clients being at a decision point, I would have to decide if I was going to scale at one way or another. If I wanted to scale in $500,000 revenue solo consultants, or if I wanted to scale at $2 million consulting agencies, then I would change my marketing. That would be the point where I'm like, okay, that now I'm speaking to this one person and here's how I'm going to do it. But I just haven't gotten to that point yet to decide what I'll do, if I'll do.
Totally. You could build out your and morph transition your business and build an entire business just for the $2 million agency types if you wanted to. Or you could go in the direction of the $500,000 coaching-y consultancy solo-y types and build a business around them if you wanted to. Or you could play in both marketplaces if you wanted to. You've got all three options available to you. You can just choose and observe. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. And you know this about me from working together for years. I am a slow mover. I am an observer and an assessor. I will just take a year to decide something to do in my business. And it served me well. I don't make rash decisions. And so I'm not in a rush. That's just my nature. If I'm not in a rush to change anything, I'm generally not in a rush for anything in my life.
And that has obviously served you and your business well, because people are like, wait, 15 hours a week. Like, how do I do that?
Right. And the context is I've been in a season of my life earlier in my career where I was rushing everywhere and I wasn't working 15 hours a week. And honestly, the rush is what kind of broke me. Like the rush is what I just remember dragging my kids behind me at 6 a.m. It was like you wake up at 5:30, you get them out of bed at 6, and everybody needs to get their shoes on because we got to get to daycare by 6:30 because I got to be in my office at 7 because I have a meeting at 7:05 and you guys have to go now.
Oh God, I want to cry just hearing that.
I know. And like that used to live inside of me every day. Oh, God. And eventually I hit burnout, right? And I looked like, I don't want my kids to live being dragged behind their mom. Like it was so obvious. And so when I say I don't rush on things, it's because I'm done with rushing. And so any point I can, you know, there's a flight I'm going to miss. I will book it for that. But that's about the only time you're going to see me like rushing for something. Yeah, I'm just at a point where I've decided to not rush, and that there is a journey, like life is a journey, and there's no rush to the end.
Yeah, it's not a race to hurry up and get to the end.
No, for success for me is enjoying every day, and I don't enjoy rushing.
Okay, so here's a question. Let's come back to pricing. How do you get away with charging that much?
I had a really good coach who kicked my butt into pricing correctly. Oh, I don't know that there's a better answer than that, Geraldine.
Oh, for real? Like pushing you to price higher and helping you see why it was good for you to put your prices up to where they are?
Yes, I honestly would have never come up with that on my own. And I would have never had the confidence to try so that I could see it succeed, so that I could have a proof point to be like, oh, it is okay.
Oh, people will pay that.
Yeah, when I first started out, I was charging, everybody take a deep breath, I was charging $50 an hour 6 years ago. And I was like, I cannot believe people are paying me $50 an hour. This is so great. Right?
Totally.
It's terrible. Yes. We're all laughing. Yes. We're all cringing.
Yes.
It was a different business model. It was just bookkeeping. It was in person, blah, blah, blah.
I'm just going to insert my own story here for half a second. When I started out coaching, I was like, I can't believe that people will pay me $35 an hour to sit and ask them questions.
Yes. Exactly.
Like, and how is this possible?
And it's
so easy.
And if you do your corporate salary on an hourly basis, you usually get to something like depending on your salary, you get to something like $30, $40, $50 an hour. So, and you're like, oh, I'm on my own and I got to do my own thing. I'm making $50 an hour and I don't have boss, office politics, all the things. Cool. So that was my starting point. So one of the best things I did, and this is not a plug, you did not tell me to say this. One of the best things I did was committing to hire a coach, to hire you specifically, somebody that I felt like I connected with. And I remember it was so hard to pay them money, like pay a fee for a coach, because you can't see, like you can't believe the results and you can't see what's going to happen. And so before you pay it, it feels like this might be a waste of money.
Totally.
And that's hard, especially for an accountant who's a very, you know, tough sale, tough to spend money, that type of personality.
Sure.
And I haven't told you this, Geraldine. So my mom, you know, she's in her 60s. She's not an accountant, never was, but like my best friend. And I was telling her that I was, how my business was going and how it's going well. And she goes, well, it's because you hired Geraldine. Because she's been with me on this journey. And I'm like, Mom, I hired this coach. I don't know. Like, I think she's helping. And so she kind of heard me talk about you along the way. And, you know, years later now, I could be like, things are going really well. And it's just great. She's like, well, I'm so glad you hired that Geraldine back those years ago.
Oh, it's so good. I love it. I love your mom. Tell her thank you.
I will. She might listen to this, Mom. Thank you.
So I have so many stories I could tell around like it being difficult to spend money on yourself and your own coaching. But I feel like that's a topic for another time. Okay, so where we were was, how do you get away with charging that much? Working together helped you stretch yourself into pricing high to see that, in fact, it can work and to really get in your bones. Sort of like riding a bicycle is not a cerebral activity. It's something you feel. And you have to feel the power of pricing high and how it changes the conversations that you have with your clients and how it changes your ability to have space and time to think about their challenges, think about their solutions without being in a hurry to, in air quotes, get the work done, move the data around, check the boxes, all the rest.
I have a story about a good illustration of what a client saw in value. And this just happened recently. I had one of my middle tier clients say to me, and they're having sales pipeline issues. I don't know if anybody else in Q1 of 2024 is having sales pipeline issues. I'm seeing this in lots of places. She's like, I want to downgrade tiers, which is totally fine. My clients are never locked into a tier. You're never locked into a contract. You have a 30-day cancellation. And so she says she wanted to downgrade. And I was like, totally fine. No problem. And I sent her a follow-up email. Here's what's the new tier options you have. Here's the pricing. Here's what it includes. Here's what it doesn't include. And I said, it doesn't include the monthly meeting and it doesn't include tax estimates, yada, yada. And the next day she emailed back and was like, I'm reminded how much value I get out of that monthly meeting. Can I change my mind? Can I stay where I am? Absolutely.
Or did you sell my spot already?
I know. And I was like, well, just so you know, if you downgrade, I don't know that I'll have that spot available later. And that wasn't a sales tactic. I was just trying to let her know that. But it was such a clear visualization of like, that was what she was worried about losing. And to me, that felt like the difference between the pricing at the middle tier and the lower tier was the value of that monthly meeting. That's what she was basically telling me, which was super interesting.
And what do you think, because the value is not in the meeting itself, right? Because you could meet with a schlep and have a boring conversation. It's not interesting. But what's the value in the meeting in their eyes?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have other accountants, CPAs ask me this. They're like, because they find it hard to believe that I meet with my clients every month. They're like, what do you talk about every single month? And I don't know. I know what I talk about. I don't know why that's so confusing. The structure of my meetings is I send them a pre-report. They get a report. They can review it beforehand. We get to the meeting. We briefly walk through what happened in the past. I call out things that are interesting to me, like, oh, look how costs spiked in here, or look how costs are trending downwards here, that type of thing. And we talk through that rather quickly. And then also part of that is really tactical things. Like I will sit on my call and help my clients sign up for QuickBooks checking. Like they will share their screen and they will click all the buttons and we will walk through that together. And that's not just one client. Like that's many clients who just want their hand held as they're doing these tactical things because they're afraid they're going to do it wrong or they're going to hit the wrong button or make the wrong selection. And so honestly, just being there and being like, yep, you got it. Oh yeah, you want that option, not that option is valuable to them. That's kind of, I would say, a third of the meeting. And then the rest of the meeting is all forward-looking strategy. What does your sales pipeline look like? You're going to have a new client come on in June. Are you going to have to hire somebody or can you do that with your current staffing capacity? And so we talk through these things that they might think it's great that they're getting a new client. They haven't thought through what costs they're going to have to incur to support that client. And so we talk through that. We also talk about things like retirement planning and tax planning. They know they don't have to worry about how much to withhold. I'm going to tell them how much to withhold. Those types of things. And just things come up and feelings come up. And sometimes it's more of a feely meeting than a tactical meeting. And that's okay. They don't have anybody else in their business to talk about money with.
Yeah. Yes.
Most of us don't.
That.
Maybe we have a good spouse or partner that we can talk about money with, even in our personal lives. But generally, money is a weird thing to talk about. And so we don't invite that conversation anywhere else in our business.
I'll just speak from as your client, and I think in general, not only is it hard to find the right people to talk about money with, you're the only person who has an accurate assessment of my numbers, right? So anybody else who I talk to money about just has their opinions. Whereas you're like, well, here's what the numbers show. Right. So you're the only person I can go to and say, let's talk about money and know that the conversation we're having is based in the numbers and not just in like, you know, in general, what the numbers do or could say. And the other thing I want to add just for listeners who might be like, wait, hold on, what do you talk about in that meeting? So I'm in your mid-package mini CFO silver. And for me, the value is always having a finger on the pulse of my money, but not having to touch the money myself, because there's a degree of like, it's not that I don't trust myself, but it's like, I don't know if I'm pushing the right buttons and making the right decisions, because I, you know, I can't keep in my head all the minutia of tax this and, you know, accrual and cash basis that and all things. Not, I mean, we do cash basis, but it's more the
thing. I love that you know that, by the way.
That was a hard concept to wrap my head around. That was in my first business. The other thing for me, just as one person, right, one data point, is I think we spend a fair amount of time, like 15 minutes or five, on, okay, here's what happened. Does this look right? But the rest of the time being like, okay, I'm coming up on X, Y, and Z decisions, and I want to make sure I understand the numbers correctly. And if I make X decision, what do we think is going to happen? If I make Y decision, what do we think is going to happen? If we make Z decision, what do we think is going to happen? And where's the sort of green lane, and where's the sort of orange, like warning signs lane, and where's the red lane? And like, how do we, what signals am I going to observe if things are going in a bad direction and I need to kind of take action quickly to correct things? And like, how much cushion do I have? And like, what's best case scenario? What's worst case scenario? Like, how much risk can I take in this situation? Not risk, but like, do I really need to fill this program, this launch this time around? Or is it fine if it, you know, has eight people? What happens if I only have two? Like, and understanding the implications of those results before they happen is so enormously valuable, because it changes what I decide to do this week, next month, and so on. And waiting until after things have gone sideways and crappy to fix them is way more costly than heading stuff off at the pass. And oftentimes I find that my intuition is not accurate and I'm way better off than I was thinking that I was going to be. But the numbers tell me, oh, like actually I don't need to fill because I'm fine with half full.
No, that's a great point. I actually didn't do forecasting. So when I started my business, it was bookkeeping on the side, like the side gig of being a full-time mom. And I didn't do any forecasting until April of 2020. And my one and only first client was a brick and mortar fitness studio. And in April of 2020, she said, no, we're going to be fine. This will be over in 2 weeks. Because
COVID,
because the state she was located in said 2 weeks shutdown, right? And everybody's like, cool, 2 weeks, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks passed and she's like, oh, no, it's only going to be another 2 weeks. Then we'll be fine. And I was like, you know, I'm a bit more of a conservative person. I'm not a pessimist, but I'm just like a let's scenario plan.
Yeah.
And she couldn't see what I could intuitively know. Like I knew how the numbers were trending and I was like, okay, I got to show this to her. So in Excel, and I don't use Excel anymore for forecasting, I forecast it out. So the next meeting, she's like, we're going to be fine. It's only 2 weeks. I was like, okay, but if it's not, you're bankrupt in October.
Mm.
And she went, oh. And I said, I hope it's fine. I really do. Let's have that attitude. But if not, your business is done in October. And she immediately changed her business model to be virtual. And she was teaching things virtually. She bought extra iPhone. She invested, right? That could scare you and make you cost savings. She invested in laptops and iPhones and Zoom memberships. And she completely upended her current business model so that she could support her clients on a virtual platform. And she's still in business today, right? This was like such a great story because she could see it's so clearly what was going to happen in 6 months that she could make better decisions today.
I love that. The value is preventing bankruptcy.
Yes.
Super valuable for your business owning clients who have families or just themselves to support.
Yes. Either bankruptcy or a load of debt. Like you didn't see it coming and now you're taking out Fundbox and credit card debt and all these things that are really expensive. And now it's almost worse than bankruptcy. Now you just are under a pile.
So it's not the meeting itself. It's the conversations that you have in the meeting that help your business owning clients make better decisions because they can see farther down the tracks what's coming.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I want to talk about time because I think we've covered the sort of the tactics of like, here's what the numbers look like behind in the spreadsheet, right? I'm also hearing listeners thinking potentially like, oh my God, like that sounds so simple. Like, could it possibly be that easy? Like when you got to the place where, and I think all along, because your business has grown sort of in lockstep with your kids being in school and time to yourself, what are your thoughts about, you know, compared to the corporate hustle grind and the small business hustle grind, did you ever have any thoughts or surprise about like, is it this easy? Is it allowed to be this easy?
I would say it's actually hard to be simple because the current of the river running through the noise in our head is grow fast, do better, make more. And that's surely the tone in corporate. And I think when you come out and hang your own shingle as a CPA, that is the most noise you will read or hear on any podcast, on any social platform that you are going to hear, let me tell you how to 10X your business. And so that is actually the easy river to jump in and to go with. The harder thing is to say, okay, but I don't want my river to go that fast. I want to go slower. And I actually don't have any support in the media telling me how to do that.
Yeah.
And so I had to make up my own and also be okay with being countercultural. And that's really hard. I really like to fit in. I really like to be normal. I really like to be average. And to be different is hard for me.
Oh, what does it feel like to be different?
You're on an island. Like I'm a pretty introverted person, but you like to be knowing that you're like part of something and you're doing it right. If you're in the group, you like to think that you're right. That's not always true, by the way. But like, I think there's this assumption that like, if I'm acting like everybody else, I'm doing it right. Right. And so to do something differently and to act in a countercultural way actually is like stepping out of the group and being like, I'm going to go do it this way. And everybody's like, oh, okay, bye. And you're like, okay, I guess I'm just going to have to trust myself. Right. And so that's a very uncomfortable feeling. And so though, yes, what I've built is simple, it's very different than what's normal. And that takes a lot of, and it takes a lot of boundaries, and it's not normal to have a lot of boundaries. And it takes a lot of diligence and a lot of planning. And we don't herald those things in our society. We like to put the results on a pedestal without talking about how we got there. And usually the big flashy results come with a lot of pain and heartache.
So let's talk about the boundaries, the diligence, and the planning. I hear a lot of CPAs that they say that they struggle with boundaries. What was it like when you say boundaries? Share with listeners what that means.
One of my biggest boundaries is just owning my calendar. And I know, mm-hmm, time blocking is not for everybody. I know you and I, Geraldine, have different systems for doing this as well that don't even align. But like for me, it's committing to, and as I've aged and as I've learned more about myself, I know that I am a person who thrives in structure, schedule, and routine. And I used to be embarrassed about that because that sounds very type A, and that sounds very, I don't know, the person who you like to tease about, right? That person is a stereotype that the media likes to kind of poke fun at, right? And so you kind of like are embarrassed that you're the person who loves structure, schedule, and routine. But who cares? I've owned it. And I now realize how much I thrive on it. So I have to build that as my boundary so that I can thrive, right? If I care about thriving, then who cares what everybody says? Build the thing that makes it work for you. And so for me, my calendar and my schedule is what I commit to every week. And every week for me, that's the same. I work 5 hours, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Every week, that's my standard schedule, unless something really wonky is happening, like a vacation or a sick kid or something. And I plan around that. And that is, there are 15 hours, much like packing a car for a trip. Your car is so big, put your suitcases in. If it doesn't fit, it doesn't go. And so if it doesn't fit in the calendar in 15 hours, it doesn't go. Then it goes to the next week, or then you have to redecide your priorities. But the benefit of that is I always get everything done that I've planned to get done in a week because it's logical and realistic. And then I can look back and go, great, got everything done that I wanted to. hit my expectations, feel great about myself, gonna go have an awesome weekend now. And then it's over, right? And I do it all again next week. So for me, one of the biggest boundaries and structure is on the last hour of the week, actually the last half hour of the week, is planning out that next week.
And in that 15 hours, is that straight up accounting related work, or does that also include business building work? Is that everything soup to nuts?
Everything soup to nuts. That includes client work and what I would call admin work.
Okay. And how about stuff like podcast episodes, podcast interviews, all that?
All included.
All in, everything. It's like 15 hours a week. Yep. If it's business related, it falls into the 15 hours a week.
Yep.
Did you ever feel like anybody was shooting daggers at you with their eyes?
No, but I get some comments. So I just started talking. I've been talking about my 15 hour week now for about a year. I hadn't before that. Somebody invited me to speak at a CPA gathering, and that's what I talked about. And it wasn't until I talked about it that I realized I had a passion for what I had built and what should be available, and people should know this is available to them inside of me. And so in the past year, I've really started talking about it, especially on LinkedIn. And sometimes I get a comment like, must be nice, or got to put the work in to get there, or I hope to get there someday. Things like, well, the assumption is I must have worked 60 hours to build my business so that I could work 15 hours, when the reality is I started at 2 hours and slowly built up to 15 hours.
Yeah.
And as if somehow like I'm special, and I don't think I'm any more special than anybody else who has boundaries and the ability to be a little different.
I believe you have a wait list, right? How does that work?
I don't know. I'm learning how it works, because there's not a lot of people and voices out there who teach you how to have a wait list. They teach you how to grow your business. So yeah, I have a wait list. Right now there are 12 people on it. It's a mental struggle to tell people no, but I have a place to send them when I tell them no. It's not no, it's no, not right now. Mm-hmm. And I have a system for that that helps battle those feelings when we have to tell somebody no.
What do you feel when you have to tell somebody no? Is it guilt, remorse, regret?
Yeah, it's guilt and a little bit of sadness, because I think so many of us CPAs want to help everybody.
Yeah.
And they usually have a really interesting problem. And I'm like, ooh, I could solve that. And you kind of get like, oh, but then you're like, no, you can't go to the candy store today. You have to go eat vegetables. And you're like, okay. And so it's a little bit of like, okay, I can't help you right now, because what's my priority is working 15 hours. And if I help you, then I'm not putting that priority first.
And how does the wait list function? Like, not necessarily like, do you keep their names in a CRM or in a Google sheet, but how do you know when to let somebody on? Do you pick from the top? Do you pick from the middle? Do they have an application? So like, do you interview them? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I probably need to be coached on, actually. I don't know, because so I have a full capacity. I have a wait list. I'm actually going to have an opening coming up soon. And I've been going through this mental, like rolling it through my brain. Like, how does that work? Do I go to the first person? Is this like selling Taylor Swift tickets? Do I send out an email to everybody all at once? I think for me, if it were me on the wait list and I was really excited to connect with somebody and explore working with somebody, if I was on there first, I would want you to reach out to me first. Now, I think I have to consider in my business model, which service line do I have an opening in? And I know on my wait list, what people are interested in. I know what level of service they're interested in. So I think to be fair and to continue, like you want to start the relationship off good, right? And so to honor the future of that relationship and to honor my business model and what I need to build, I think what I'm landing on is the right way is to go find the earliest person who wanted that line of service, connect with them, ask if they're interested. If not, they can stay on the wait list. It's not like not now or never. Then move on to the next person. And that sounds like a really kind of inefficient process, which everything in my business is so efficient that feels almost wrong, but it feels like the right way to do it to build the relationship. So I think I would love your feedback, Geraldine. If you have a different way of doing it or a thought, that's what I've come up with right now.
Off the cuff, my thought is around know what your reasons are for making the decision and make sure that you like your reasons. And if you like your reasons, then great. Right. And if the strategy is to scale, then perhaps avoid the inefficient, but your strategy isn't to scale. So you don't need things to necessarily be efficient. So I don't have a right or wrong. It's like, what are you trying to accomplish?
I love that, because what you just said can apply to almost anything. It can apply to big business models and little processes in our business.
So how does having 12 people on your wait list change your posture?
When I found out that I was going to have an opening, I didn't flinch. It was wonderful. Like, it surprised me because the client needs changed. And so getting the email that said they were no longer going to need service surprised me from receiving the email. It didn't make me flinch from a sales perspective, from a money perspective.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of like, oh, cool. I get to discover what it feels like to manage a wait list now. Like, I get to go, I haven't gone through this process yet where I'm at capacity. I have a wait list and I need to only fill one spot. It's not like I can take as much as I can get. It's like, I need to fill this one spot and I need to do it the right way. I was kind of excited, like, ooh, I get to see how this works now. I get a new experience in my business. I get to like navigate what that feels like.
Nice. And from a cash flow standpoint, you weren't like, uh-oh.
No. And, you know, I have such, we didn't talk about margins or take home. Like, my business has a cash reserve. I have a high margin business. I don't require in my personal life all the profit that it can generate. I've built a structure that doesn't make me flinch.
Yeah.
With a wait list.
And for listeners, what's a high margin business? Because that's relative.
Yeah. So if we can talk real numbers, are we allowed to talk real numbers?
Yeah.
I'm like a 120 to 130 in revenue. And I won't say profit because everybody will be like, well, does that include your salary or not? Because we have a bunch of accountants listening. Like,
yeah.
Total benefit. And this is pre-tax total benefit. Salary, profit, retirement contributions is probably around 180 to 190.
And top line revenue is?
Like 220 to 230.
So for listeners who are like, that just sounds so amazing. Like, yeah, like, please, how do I do that? Which, you know, what you have isn't necessarily what everybody wants. But for the listeners who are like, oh my gosh, that's like, goodness, that sounds so awesome. How do you think about your business now that you didn't know or see when you were starting out? Like, what is your thinking now that it wasn't 3 years ago?
I think I didn't realize, like, I had no clue what it would look like when it was, quote, fully built. And who knows if it's fully built right now. But at this junction, I had no idea what it would look like. And I didn't realize how much I would enjoy systematizing things and creating efficiencies and what that would cause. Like, I think we think it's going to be really boring if we niche. I'm going to have all the same clients and all the same, like, that can sound boring to somebody. I'm going to have all the same processes. I just push a button and I do it. But it opens up this opportunity for time to create value for your clients that would have been a nuisance before. And so you get this like question from a client, and it used to be a like, oh, I don't have time to do this, right? And now I'm like, I actually do, because I've systematized the things that I can. Now, when somebody's like, the state of Maryland just decided that every business owner has to contribute to a 401k, like has to, even if they're a soloist, I'm like, oh, I should go research that legislation and see what the requirements are. And I don't roll my eyes. I just go do it because I have the time. And that client is incredibly grateful because they wouldn't know how or have time to do that. And they wouldn't trust the decision that they got to at the end of it. Even if it was the right one, they would be so uneasy about it. They just want somebody else to tell them, yeah, that was right. And then they feel better. I could not have predicted getting to that point. And that feels fun. Like, when people are like, niching will be boring. It's going to be boring. Like, no, no. There's going to be so many new fun things. And the things that you've been waiting to do, where you're like, oh, when I have the time, I'll take that CPE course to get better knowledge on whatever nuance of tax or accounting that you're interested in. Like, you will create the time to actually do that. Now honor yourself and go do it, because you've created the time to do it.
Being able to serve your clients with more value and at a higher level never gets boring. Erica Goody, this has been so awesome. If listeners want to find you, your podcast, all the things, where can they do that?
Yeah, I hang out on LinkedIn a lot and I love to connect people there. So hit me up there and then you can find everything else on ericagoody.com.
Awesome. And I'll link to things in the show notes for people who need the URL. This has been so great. Thank you so much for coming on the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast.
Thanks, Geraldine. I loved it.
Hi again. Would you rather spend your weekends outside playing or at your desk? In Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind, we put an end to overworking while maintaining revenue. Registration is open now, but it won't be for long. Go to GeraldineCarter.com now to enroll today.